to the Autoblog Podcast. I am Dan Roth. I'm joined this week by Zach Bowman.
Hey, guys.
And Jeffrey Ross.
Hello.
We are brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of all-season and performance tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components. And those items make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. So, it's been a little while. We took last week off for a variety of reasons. One of them to say thanks, troops, for protecting us. But the other was, Zach, you were traveling and I was traveling, and yeah. So your travels were more interesting than mine. What happened to you?
Last weekend or Memorial Day weekend?
Let's say Memorial Day weekend first, unless something exceptionally interesting happened last weekend.
No, Memorial Day weekend, I got the chance to go see an E-Cors exhibition race. It's the East Coast Off-Road Series, I guess, something with an S. Basically, it's typically, you know, these guys take these heavily modified, well, they've got different classes, but typically heavily modified off-road rigs and race down a predetermined trail or course, right? And this one was an off-road exhibition in Harlan, so it was set up in sort of an off-road field, basically. So they had different obstacles, like a tank trap and like these big boulders to scramble over. And like you got penalties for avoiding other some of the obstacles, but the goal was to just do a timed lap, right? It was pretty cool. It's the first time I've gone to one of those, and you know, I sort of get to hang out in the pits with one of the guys who runs an F-Toy, which I don't know if you've heard of one of these. It's a
that chassis. Sounds obscene. What is it?
Well, it's a chassis designed by Hendrix Motorsports, right? And it's basically just a tube chassis that bolts onto a straight axle Toyota frame. So you get this wild buggy that lets you position whatever you want, wherever you want, basically, but it's still mated to a Toyota frame. So one of the guys was racing one of those, and he let me bang it around the course after everything was done, which was pretty rad.
That does sound pretty rad.
Yeah, no, it was just a lot of fun, and just, you know, a lot of dirt and a lot of mud and a lot of dust and all that stuff. So that was a good time.
22R?
I believe this one was a 22R. It was some propane fed.
Propane, really? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is pretty cool. It was just a neat deal. It was like the racing position was more of like a lazy boy position, I guess.
kind of like driving a smart car off road, right? Because that strikes me as like a lazy boy position as well.
No, imagine like driving. I assume this is like driving like a Gallardo around, because you're just like slung down, you know, like your feet are way out in front of you, and it feels like, I don't know, it took a lot of getting used to, but crazy grip, crazy flex, and just an incredibly capable machine. I mean, these guys are hammering over these tank traps, which are basically like telephone poles set across the path, right? And these huge divots in between the telephone poles, and they're probably 25 or 30 of these telephone poles, and some of the holes could be up to a foot and a half, 2 feet deep. They're freaking hauling the mail coming across these things, really 25, 30 miles an hour. It was impressive to watch. Very impressive to watch.
And you lived to tell the tale.
I lived to tell the tale. Yeah, it was a good time.
So what is it cost to run and that kind of stuff? Like, is this something that you could, because like motorsports, right, even Lemons is kind of pricey. Is this the thing, like, you really, you got to commit?
Yeah, I mean, it's like any motorsports, you know. I mean, there is no quote-unquote cheap motorsport, but I mean, I think this is fairly accessible. One of the guy who actually sort of got me into this whole thing, we towed up his, I think it's an 84 straight axle Toyota. But it's, you know, it's got a decent lift. It's got Chevy springs in the rear and, you know, pretty serious gears. And I think he had like 45-inch tires, or 37-inch, I'm sorry, 37-inch tires. But basically, it was just his off-road buggy. He bought it for $4,000. It's still got the standard cab. It's still got, you know, a seatbelt and all the rest of that stuff. And since it was an exhibition, anybody could pay the $40 or whatever it was to run to see their time. So we talked him into running, and you know, sure enough, he got out there and banged around. It was pretty cool. So
it's an actual race.
Yeah, it's a race, and there are points and all the rest of that. So
did they win?
No.
No.
Well, originally we thought he was going to be the only one in that class because just of the way the rules worked. But two other guys joined in, and one of the guys who joined his class was received the fastest lap of the day. So.
Well, there you go. And then you didn't stop there with the motorsports weekends, right? I mean, this weekend was also productive and somewhat racing related.
Yeah, somewhat. So I don't know if you guys remember the Racing the Rock documentary. It was the documentary that was filmed about our Targa exploits with the Flying Miata crew.
That thing you did last year that we sort of threatened to do again this year, but nobody decided to pony up the money for us to like actually do it.
Correct. Yeah. Well, that was in 2011. It was 2 years ago, which I hard to believe that was 2 years ago. But yeah. So Adam Costa, the guy who filmed the documentary, got his hands on a Targa package, and basically the Targa package is a supercharger and the springs and shocks and sway bars and a bunch of other bits.
For a Miata.
For his NC. I think he's got like a 2010 or 2011 NC retractable hardtop. And you know, we were sort of chatting back and forth on email, and I was like, sweet, well, when are we putting it in? And he's like, well, I don't know, when do you want to come up? And it just sort of escalated from there. So, you know, sure enough, I talked Beth into piling into our 2006 Miata and driving the ludicrous distance from Knoxville to Portland, Maine, where Adam lives, just to install this kit and turn around and come home. So Beth and I, you know, knocked off Thursday and Friday, left Wednesday night, and we, some sort of poor planning on our parts, had us go through D.C., and basically, we did like the traffic jam tour of the Northeast. Like we just hit every. There was a traffic jam in every freaking state from basically Northern Virginia all the way to Maine. The only states that didn't give us any grief was Maine on the way up.
So what time did you hit DC?
Well, now see, here's the deal. Like, so we left. We left Knoxville at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and got to DC probably around 1, right? But the original plan was to stop in DC and stay with Beth's brother, but they live in Arlington, which is on the west side. So if we'd gotten up in the morning, no matter when we got up, we were just going to be fighting DC traffic all the way through, right? So we're like, well, we'll just power through DC instead, you know, sort of shooting from the hip. We'll just power through DC, get to the other side. Well, for whatever reason, the Maryland Department of Transportation decided to shut down 495.
I was going to say 495 goes around 95, and you know,
495 was. I mean, literally, you know, traveling at night, best time to do it, right? You're just freaking hauling the mail. There's no traffic. It's nice and cool. You know, whatever. It's really, really, really nice. But they shut down they shut down the road without any warning. There was no signs, no detours, nothing. It was just like, well, here you go. The road's closed. So I'm sitting on a 4-lane interstate with the road entirely closed for 2 hours. We just sit there.
Yeah. See, that's the thing that like I've noticed driving long distances. I mean, within the state, but man, they don't do the construction during the day for the most part. But at night, they're out and everything is under construction.
Right. Well, it's typically not so bad because, you know, they'll shut down a lane or whatever and you'll just, you know, it slows down a little bit, but it's not a dead stop. We stopped at like, I think it was Joppa, Maryland or wherever the hell it was. And, you know, it's going to be a quality establishment. It was a Super 8. You walk in the door and like the desk clerk is in like one of those like bank teller bulletproof glass bubbles, you know, and like there's
that's
like
a, you get back in the car,
there's like a money slot, you know, because they're afraid of like somebody ricocheting a bullet through to kill the Super 8. I don't know, but so, you know, we got to this motel at 4:30 in the morning, right? So you know,
yeah,
crash. So, for
didn't you use like Waze or some other sort of traffic app on your phone?
We're driving from DC to Maine in the middle of the week, right? What, you know, what could it do but just throw up its arms and be like, dumb shit, what did you expect?
Well, I mean, you yeah. have, okay, so this is the modern age, right? So you have...
This is the modern age.
You have navigation on your telephone.
Oh,
all right, because I will tell you, all right, I also took a trip last week, and we'll get to that, but, like... Your phone has navigation, and then like in other metro areas, you can dial 511 or some other number and get the traffic reports. And, the last time I drove to Manhattan, I listened to WCBS News Radio 88, and they have traffic and weather on the 8s, like AM and pretty much every large market. Like in DC, you could probably get WTOP, and they would have traffic and weather.
I'm gonna file all of these under things I know. None of which helps.
None of which you practiced.
How about that?
I mean, I realize like AM is only for old guys like me. But
anyway,
yes,
so...
it's Radio 880 now. Thank you, Milanzo, the intern in Ustream. But when I was a kid, damn it, it was News Radio 88. So anyway,
that's good.
Yeah, sorry.
So basically. Just horrendous traffic the entire way up there. But we got up there and Adam had a pretty cool surprise for us. We get up there and Brandon Fitch, who was my driver in Targa, and his fiance are there. They flew in from Denver just for the weekend to hang out and wrench and all that stuff. So that was really cool. So the three of us hung out, put in the supercharger, the springs, the sway bars, and all that business that day, Saturday, basically. No, Friday. I'm losing track of my days. So we did it all in one day, about 18 hours of total wrenching, start to finish. Get it done. Car's crazy fast. Feels good. And the next day we just hung out in Portland and did touristy things and had good food and hung out with good people and turned around and did the 16 hours back in one day on Sunday. And now here I am.
So how was your little tour of Massachusetts? You didn't stop by. I'm kind of hurt.
You know, I gotta say, of all of the New England states, I think Mass was probably my favorite, because the instant you cross the Connecticut line into Mass, people just hammer down, right?
Oh, yeah.
Connecticut, everybody is, like, married to the speed limit. It's, like, speed limit or 3 miles an hour over.
And Connecticut, you came across, you did what? Up through New York, you did Tappan Zee to 684 to 84?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so 84 west of Hartford. Like, the longest stretch of 84 sucks.
Yeah, no, I think Connecticut, no offense to our Connecticut listeners, probably my least favorite state to drive through. Yeah,
it's terrible.
Pretty much ever.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
You ever driven through South Carolina?
Oh, no, dude, I love South Carolina. South Carolina's all about the hammer down.
Not on 16.
Mm, fair enough. But yeah, no, it was a good experience. Beth and I... I came into this being a little bit concerned for the health of our marriage, just because it's a tiny car, it's a long time, and, you know, I don't know, I didn't expect a whole lot of comfort or sleep or any of those things. And I gotta say, 16 hours in that car wasn't horrible. You know, we did 750 miles with the top down. We wanted to do the full 1,000 with the top down, but we hit rain, like just south of Roanoke in Virginia. And it was just fine. I mean, it hummed right along. It was fun to drive. It was fun to have the top down. You know, the only complaint I have is that the stereo is kind of crappy. So that's probably on the list of things to address. But I mean, it did just over 2,200 miles, over those 2 days of traveling and never missed a beat. Nothing went wrong. Nothing was broken. Nothing weird happened. It just, just hummed right along. So
do you now kiss the Miata?
I love it dearly. I honestly, I don't think I've ever had a car that I enjoy more than this one. I honestly don't.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was very cool. It was a good experience.
Good. Good. And you got to enjoy Maine at its most humid, too. Well, you guys were in Portland, so you were like up on the coast, so it probably wasn't that bad.
Did not matter. I was just sweating buckets the entire time I'm up there. And of course, you know, nobody believes in air conditioning up there, because why have air conditioning? It never gets this hot. And it was like 85 degrees and just like swimming through the air, humid.
Yeah, but like there's only like four more days of that left this year for Maine. And then it's like, let's see, were they out of mud season yet and into black fly season?
No, we kind of hit like the sweet spot, I guess. I mean, it was kind of warm, but it was really nice. Just a cool part of the country. I mean, just absolutely gorgeous, and people.
Portland is an awesome city. Portland is great.
food is delicious, and yeah, it was a really, really cool time. And I honestly I cannot believe we got that freaking supercharger. We got that whole car together in 18 hours. You know, I think flying Miata, if you were to give them your car, I think they take a total of like, I don't know, it's like a week and a half or so to put the car together and shake it down and all the rest of that stuff. And you know, he's got fine tuning stuff to do, but it was, you know, we were hauling right along. It was pretty good.
Did you get to drive it?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Is it nice and irresponsible with the supercharger? Because superchargers are, I mean, the best ever.
It's really, really good. It, you know, just idling around town, putting around town, all the rest of that stuff. You're looking at like, I don't know. It just feels like my Miata. It feels exactly like my Miata. But the instant you romp on it, it's just like instant power delivery, and you have all the torque, and it just freaking gets up and goes. You're looking at like right at 270 horsepower, somewhere right around there in that car, which is a pretty healthy bump. And it's almost perfect. I mean, I would say between 270 to 300 horsepower just fixes a lot of the Miata ails, and it doesn't add a whole lot of heft to the car, you know?
Yeah, well, and I don't know. I just love that immediate response you get out of superchargers, and I've had turbocharged cars for a long time, but man, I get in something that's supercharged, and it's just like, with a positive displacement blower like that, it's just like, bam!
Yeah.
There you go.
It's all up in your face. Now, you know, that kit's pricey. I think if you want the whole target package, you're looking at like, I don't know, $7,500 or something like that. But that's, you know, all the springs and all the rest of that. I don't know exactly how much the supercharger costs. Let me see here. Superchargers. If you want just the system with the ECU, you're looking at $5,000. So
yeah,
you know, it's a chunk of change, but it was pretty easy to install, I gotta say. I mean, all the parts were right there, and the instructions were pretty good. And of course, it helps to have somebody who works with flying Miata.
Yeah.
And be like, no, turn it the other way. No, the other way. There you go. So that was pretty good.
That's probably why you got it done so quick.
Yeah, no, if it had been ourselves, we'd have just gotten like halfway through and been like, all right, let's get hammered. So,
so Jeff, you're awfully quiet. Are you hammered?
I'm not.
That's too bad.
But I had an equally, not as much driving, but for Memorial Day, we took a Ram 1500 down to Canaveral, and I got to see a rocket launch, which was pretty cool.
What kind of rocket?
A Delta IV carrying a U.S. Air Force satellite.
That is not a tiny rocket. That's pretty badass.
No, we were sitting there, and we checked into the hotel, and the front desk person said, there's going to be a launch soon, and your hotel room's facing it. So we get all checked in, and we were sitting there about 20 minutes, and you could feel it first. It was just a rumble. And I looked out the window, and there's a streak going across the sky. It was just amazing.
That is well. I would love to take in a night launch.
Well, I've seen the last launch I saw was the second to last shuttle launch, and I was about 150 miles away, and you could still feel that a little bit. Like there was some concussion. Like after it was really far away, you felt like a little bit of pulsing, and they say that was the sound waves coming up that far. But this one, I mean, it was maybe 30 miles away from us. So it was bright and very in focus, and it was really cool. And then of course we did touristy stuff down there, but the rocket was probably the most interesting to talk about on here.
So how was the Ram though? Did that achieve launch velocity?
The Ram was fun.
Escape velocity?
Yeah, we got we did the trip down, drove around and came back all in one tank.
And this is a 1500, so was it the V6?
No, it was the Hemi Sport.
With MDS.
That's a good-looking truck.
That is a nice truck.
Yeah, well, I'm not a fan of the 8-speed.
We are surprisingly positive this week. What the heck is the matter with us?
But that's not all. There's more.
this weekend. That's not all.
Well, because Zach got to talk about two weekends. I get to talk about two weekends.
Whoa. I'm the only two-weekend guy around here, buddy.
Whoa.
Slow
this
your
past
roll.
Weekend.
No weekends for anyone else.
I spent Saturday working on a ZR1, a C4 yeah. ZR1.
A C4 ZR1 with the LT5.
Yep.
Hooray.
We're doing all sorts of upgrades like fuel pumps.
Taking up the LT5?
No.
Oh, Dan, come on now.
No, I like
you
the
don't mean that.
No, it's a neat engine.
I've never driven in one, and I'm looking forward. We're going to finish it up at the end of this month, and then I get to ride in it, and hopefully even drive it. But there's a friend of mine who owns it, and then his friend is like a ZR1 master. Like, I forget what site he owns. It's like ZR1.net or something like that. I forget. But he knows everything about ZR1s. Like, we're taking apart the fuel injectors.
The order to stack the gold chains.
Yes.
With wave. Sorry, that joke fell flat. All right, moving on.
But no, he. I mean, right down to like these little fuel injector gaskets and the clips for the injectors. I mean, he knew everything, and it was fun. We didn't get it finished, but. We will later this month. And then I'm going to help another friend of mine work on a Ford SVO Mustang.
That doesn't suck.
Did you get to drive any of these? Or?
I mean, eventually, once they're all running, I didn't get to drive the ZR1 because we left it. The engine, the top of the engine was still off. Like, the intake was sitting on the windshield and the injectors were on the floor.
Mm. You sure they don't want you just for your sockets?
No, they only borrowed my crowbar.
Oh, all right. Do you have, like, a fancy Snap-on crowbar?
It is Snap-on.
Oh, man. Attaboy. I'm legitimately impressed. Snap-on stuff is expensive. I bought a super cheap 20-ton press that may or may not kill me today.
Oh, is that a Harbor Freight press?
Hell yes, it was.
Harbor Freight.
You gotta check the welds on those, because it's a bottle jack, right? Yeah. It's a bottle jack that's turned upside down, right?
No, it's right side up.
Was it? Because you pump on it, and sometimes you can watch the actual frame that it pushes against flex.
It's like that with all of them, to be perfectly honest. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, the guy behind the counter was like, "Do you want the unlimited 2-year warranty for an extra $40?" And the thing was like $160. I was like, "No, it's a jack and some steel, man. What the hell's gonna go wrong
if
with it?
If it busts, I'll weld it.
Exactly.
Make it better."
Exactly. Oh, no,
like,
honestly,
you'll
like,
only have
tools.
90 days to return it. I was like, dude, it's okay. Just sell me the freaking press, for love of Christ.
Honestly, like, I have not been disappointed with Harbor Freight tools. Like, you have to understand what you're getting.
Yeah,
but
yeah. I think
for a weekend warrior, they're perfect.
Yeah, I think you got to understand what you're getting, and you've got to be careful about what you buy. Like, I'm not sure I would buy anything gasoline or electricity powered, but hand tools. Simple stuff like jacks and presses and like their tool cabinets are actually really nice. I want some of their tool cabinets pretty hardcore.
I actually, I have an Ingersoll Rand impact wrench, like a nice one. Okay. One of the like sort of like quiet, spiffy ones. It was like over $200 when I bought it.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law has a Harbor Freight Earthquake or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
That was not $200. When I go to his shop, the one I prefer is the Harbor Freight one.
Nice.
Because it's ballsy. Where mine may be quiet, but it's wimpy. And yes, I am aware you need to put oil in the impact wrench and all of that. Like, it outperforms mine like crazy. So I'm like, forget this. I'll just use yours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for that kind of stuff, yeah, it's fine. I have the set of their funny spring compressors, too. So all their stuff seems to work. You do have to examine it kind of carefully.
Exactly.
If it's the type of thing that could kill you.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, as worst comes to worst, there's going to be like, I don't know, a bearing race embedded in the concrete wall down here or something. So, or my chest. So,
yeah.
One of these two. I may pick up a Kevlar vest. You never know.
Yeah. You just got to calculate the trajectories of like, you know, where are things going to fly when this whole contraption explodes?
You know, the thing is, like, you can't find used shop presses on Craigslist. Like, that's typically my go-to for high-dollar stuff like this. And, yes, I classify $200 tools as high-dollar. But, yeah, you just don't find them, you know? I guess everybody just either holds on to their presses or junks them when they're done with them. But
yeah, or sells them off. My brother-in-law, he's got an Arbor press that's actually a decent press, but it's not hydraulic. So it's basically you got to get, like, cheaters on it and stuff.
Right.
That's less than useful.
Sure. Well, I bought this one specifically because the subframe rail connectors on the Mustang require a little bit of tweaking because the car is a little bit tweaked. So, and that's what they say to use in the instructions. They're like, well, you know what I don't have? A press. You know what's on sale this week? A press. Problem solved.
Nicely done, sir. Nicely done. I salute you. I was at Tractor Supply looking at their cheapest welder going, Didn't happen, but I thought about it.
Craigslist's a great place to get a welder. That's where I got mine.
Yeah, that's true. I want to get a gasoline-powered one so I don't have to plug it in.
Ooh.
I mean, you know, if we're going to overkill, we're going to overkill.
Why not?
So it sounds like we all went on trips. I also took a little trip this week. I had to fly
down.
Did
you listen to AM radio the entire time?
No, I had to fly to Philly for work on last Tuesday. So that was entertaining. Airbus A320 on the way down, landed like butter. On the way back, it was an Embraer E190. It did not land like butter. It was like a thud. But the interesting part is, I thought Philadelphia smells pretty bad at the airport. B, I had an Avenger with a four-cylinder as a rental car, which was a vehicle we were talking about not too long ago on the podcast. And
are we talking to like live Dan Roth or like the specter of Dan Roth after he slit his wrists for driving his car?
And what I listened to was I listened to WBUR while I was in Boston. And then when I got to Philadelphia, I listened to WHYY because, I mean, it's the home of fresh air.
That's right. The home of Terry Gross.
Exactly.
Kind of make it happen.
Like, I just wanted to stop by her house like Mike Birbiglia did with that movie. What was it? Sleepwalk With Me?
Yeah.
I just wanted to like stop by and be like, hey. But I didn't.
Except that, you know, Terry Gross has interviewed Mike Birbiglia. Yeah, has not interviewed Dan Roth.
Well, because Mike Birbiglia is interesting. Like, I mean, he jumped out of a window while he was like sleepwalking.
It's true.
I did none of those things. But yeah, the four-cylinder Avenger, I gotta say, like...
Don't say it was good, Dan.
It's not good.
I will get back in this car, drive back to Mass just to punch you in the face. I will do it.
It's not...
I know the way now, you see.
Good is relative, right? Like, it's not bad.
For $15 a day, it's not bad.
No, it cost me more than that. I will tell you, man. Like, you keep your mileage under 74 miles, fine. They'll charge you a little bit for fuel. It's like $13 or something. You go over that, they charge you $9 a gallon if you go with their easy fuel option.
No, you're supposed to fill it up for you.
Nah, I was traveling for work. I wasn't putting any of my money in. Like, they're like, do you want us to fill it up? I was like, yeah. It's on the work credit card. I don't want to have to deal with the hassle of expensing it. So... whatever, but when I got back, they actually cut me a break because I did like 78 miles, and they were like, "Yeah, whatever." But it's the four-cylinder Avenger's not bad, not bad like the last Patriot Compass I drove. And I think the difference is while it's very similar, it has a real transmission instead of a CVT, which makes a huge amount of difference.
That's fair.
In that car and.
The Dodge Avenger is like the AM radio of cars.
What's wrong with AM radio?
Nothing, except that the world has progressed past AM radio now, Dan.
It's so cool, man. It bounces off the ionosphere. You can pick up all kinds of stuff at night. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Nobody cares what I think about AM radio. But the car that I drove to the airport... was not as good as the Avenger. I did not prefer it to the rental.
Which was?
Forester.
Yeah. Well.
A brandy new Forester. You know, the Forester that now looks like a RAV4 should, because the RAV4 now looks like a Mitsubishi.
Yes.
Since they've all restyled. Yeah, I don't like the Forester. Man, that is a mushy, squeezy, awkward-looking, terrible driving thing.
Well, they're selling the crap out of them, so, you know, don't know what to tell you.
When the Dodge Avenger is better...
It's not better. It's, well, you don't mean that. Don't anyone listen to Dan. That's not true.
Raging Fried Gold, you listen to me.
Just, I don't know. I have driven both the Avenger...
back to back, I will tell you. You prefer the Avenger?
Forester is very functional. It's all-wheel drive, and I can't believe you talked me into defending the freaking Forester. How is this possible? Only you could do this. Only you could do this.
No, the Forester is
It's efficient. It's all-wheel drive. It's incredibly functional, and it's a very, very large back seat. It's not fast. It doesn't handle well.
Completely not fast now with the new engine too. It's just like this one had like 200 and something miles on it when I got it. I was horrible to it from like the moment I drove it because it just does not accelerate. It's got a teeny engine and an awful transmission, and you just have to plant your foot and wait while it just wails away. And do you know how horrible you feel doing that to an engine with 300 miles on it?
Not horrible at all.
Very horrible.
It's a rental.
Sorry. Exactly. Did you do the e-brake burnout? Did you do the e-brake burnout?
No, this is the Forester I'm talking about, not the
Forester. Probably a good idea that you didn't.
No, the Forester was brand new. I don't remember how many miles the Avenger had. It was like 5,000 miles. But it's just no. I do not like the Forester. I would prefer the Avenger over the Forester.
Oh.
Given the choice. Now, if it comes down to like Forester versus Patriot or Compass, that's going to be difficult because both of those have CVTs. And I think the CVT is really the key in why they suck so much.
All right, that's fair.
It's just terrible. I might have a different opinion of the Forester if I could shift it.
Maybe. Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. But this week, I mean, they kind of atoned for it. They sent me an ES350, which... it's kind of another car you shrug off.
Tell us how you really feel.
Well, I'm looking around. I don't want to bag on Lincoln too much because I know we can get off on the Lincoln tangent. But the ES350 is $43,000, and I'm looking around going, you know, I bet the MKZ has a nicer interior than this, and is actually a better value and better equipped for the same money. I can't imagine that it would drive worse. The ES350 is just... like it's got the 268 horsepower V6, right? Which is fine, because it's plenty powerful. So the car is actually damn quick. But, man, the tires and just the way they calibrate the chassis, just bad. Bad. It's one of those cars where you go, this has too much power for what it is. And being an enthusiast, that's really difficult to say that something has too much power. That just ain't right.
I was a little confused by what you just said there.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean, the ES350, it's quiet. It's got a lot of stuff. I can see why people like it, because most people don't want to be bothered to drive. Here's a fun fact that I didn't realize till this weekend, because it was scorching hot here. Those steering wheels with the wood on them, mm-hmm. when you have the car in the sun with the windows all the way up and stuff, and you go to like move it, you know what's really, really hot and will give you like a nice red stripe across your palm?
The wooden stuff?
The wood on the steering wheel has been in the sun.
So, Dan, would you tell me that the Lexus wood gave you a red stripe across your hand? Is that what you'd tell me?
Yeah, I guess we can go with that.
Just checking. This is all.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what do you say about the ES350 that... It has the quietest power windows I've ever heard.
Jesus
Christ. I mean, seriously. It does. They've actually, like, designed it.
Is there anything that you liked specifically aside from the power windows?
It did nothing for me.
Like, really? Nothing at all?
Like, I'm so dispassionate about this car.
Well, that's not a car that's designed to stoke passion. It's a car that's designed to sell to as many people as possible. I don't know if you've noticed, but Toyota is very good at this. Toyota is very good at building cars that just you could not be paid to give two cares about, but sell like, you know, hotcakes. Because they just do a job, you know, they just do a job. This one just happens to be comfortable and quasi-luxurious and get people from point A to point B and have the Lexus badge on the front, and that's it.
I guess I was disappointed, like, in some areas, it's Lexus nice. Like, the leather on the seats is very cushy. The seats are actually pretty comfy. It's trimmed nicely. But then, like, you see Camry, first of all. Like, with the dash that doesn't actually meet the door panels like cars have since maybe the 80s. No, in the Lexus as it is in the Camry, it's like, here's the dashboard, which we clamped on like a mantle. And the door panels, and there's like a quarter-inch gap and stuff. Seems weird. And it's just like some of the materials and stuff, you're like, why does that feel cheap to me? It shouldn't in a $43,000 car like this, but
so much money.
Yeah, I mean, it's good looking. I do like the way it looks now. The restyling has updated it, and Lexus has found its mojo in terms of styling. I really like the GS. The new IS seems pretty badass, considering it just won a Comparo in Car and Driver. But this is kind of like, I really see no reason to buy this over the top trim Camry. But if you want a Lexus, I guess it'll do the trick. It's honestly not that bad of a deal. It starts at like 36.
I don't know. If you've been in the top trim Camry with that horrible, horrible fake wood inside, you'd do the Lexus in 2 seconds.
I mean, the Lexus has the real wood, especially this one too, that had like the upgraded bird's eye maple. You got to spend like $1,300 to get the luxury package, which has the perforated, heated and ventilated seats and the maple and the power tilt telescope stuff and all that business.
Well, it's not actually a lot for a package these days.
No, then you got to spend an extra $2,700 for the navigation and that little mousey. Well, I think the mousey thing is standard, but all the other stuff, I don't know. It's not. I honestly think that the given objectively looking at the MKZ, I think it's actually really competitive with this car. I'll have to drive it to tell you more, but
Yeah, and like you said, I don't want to get sucked into the Lincoln trap, but I do not find the MKZ attractive in any way.
Do you find the ES350 attractive?
No, but I don't find it unattractive, which I would say for the MKZ.
Okay. I thought that's fair.
I don't know.
Did you find that when you saw the MKZ in person, like at least it looked different than it did in pictures?
No, it looked pretty much just as dumpy is the word I want to use there. Starts with a D, ends with umpy. Dumpy, that's the word.
There have been dumpy Lincolns before.
See, I like the way it looks. I've only seen two of them.
It looks not okay in person. It's got weird mustache.
The weird mustache, and then like, what is going on with the rear end? Where it's like I don't know.
Oh, the rear end is from. It's like they were like, "Hey, Saab's dead. Let's make a Saab."
Maybe that's why you're like, oh, crap ton of Saabs up north, by the way.
Oh, especially in Portland. Woods. Yeah, Portland is sort of the end of the Volvo line. If you get north of Portland, you'll see far fewer European vehicles. But Portland is full of Volvos and Saabs.
Volvos and Saabs and Subarus. It's quite the country.
Oh, here's something I thought you'd appreciate. The guy who's the hack mechanic for the BMW CCA, he writes the hack mechanic column. His name's Rob Siegel.
Okay.
Has a book called Memoirs of a Hack Mechanic. There'll be a review soon. But in there, it made me chuckle because I read the book and it was like, I will not drive a Subaru. And there was an expletive in there, which I'm leaving out. But I was just like, I wanted to actually like take a picture of the excerpt and send it to you.
Did he say why?
No, but I can ask him.
You should ask him.
We'll see. I'm going to try to do a podcast segment with him.
I bet you I know why.
probably for the same reason, say I don't like the Forester and you didn't like your Forester after a little while. It doesn't drive as rewarding as it should. Although yours was a turbo, so that's probably a little different.
Mine was at least crazy fast in a straight line. Brandon, actually, we were talking about this over the weekend, and he was like, it's just like driving a boat, you know? Like, you romp on it, and, like, the nose pitches up, and then you stab the brakes, the nose pitches down, and turn the steering wheel, and nothing happens for a little while, and it's pretty much true. I think it's pretty accurate.
Yeah. I don't like boats. I grew up around boats. I'm all set with boats. I don't want to drive any boats. Done with boats.
What
say about boats?
Moving on.
Yeah. So cars that cost as much as cheap boats. Porsche Macan. Is that how we say it?
That's right. Macan. Don't call it the Macan.
Macan.
Which is what we call it down here.
That's a place in Georgia.
Exactly. It's the Macan.
It's the Macan like pecan.
Which, yes. Which if you were in Georgia and asked, where is my Macan? You'd probably get shunned.
I think if I were in Georgia, there'd probably be other reasons for them to shun me.
This is probably true.
I mean, I guess it's like news that's not news, right? Like, if we've heard about this, what are we hearing about it now? Because
it's coming to the Geneva Auto Show. That was the entire post.
Geneva or L.A.?
L.A.
L.A., whatever.
It's one of those shows.
It's coming to a freaking auto show. Congratulations. Yeah, based on the Q5, it's gonna have different body panels, which we already knew. We've already seen it. It's coming to an LA near you in November.
When did we see it?
Well, we've seen spy pictures, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it looks basically like a like Cayman.
Yeah.
Or a Cayenne. Yeah, Cayenne that somebody threw in the dryer.
Like, go to a Cayenne, right? Walk up to a Cayenne and then back up. A bunch.
And you pretty much got it.
There you go.
Which is not a bad thing. I think the Cayenne does the I'm a Porsche SUV thing really well, and it looks like the Macan will do the Porsche SUV thing really well. So, great. Hooray. There was some guesstimation on sticker price, which I guess is significant, but this is coming from Auto Express, which I don't want to say they make things up but they make things up. So when they're like, yeah, it'll cost like $42,000 ish, you're like, okay, all right.
I don't think that thing is going to arrive here for, well, what does the Boxster start at?
Well, the Cayenne starts at $49,600. So
that's not at it. I mean, see, the thing is, like, they announced the price in pounds, first of all. So you right. can't really, like,
well, you can be clever. You can look at how much, you know, a Cayenne is pricing for in the UK, and then look at the equivalent in the US, and you do the conversion factor for the numbers that they had in the post, and you know it looks like, say, if you were to look at a Cayenne in the US and a Cayenne in the UK, the US price is roughly 80% of the UK price. So do some number switching around, and you have a number that who the hell knows if it's accurate or not.
Well, yeah, because it's like you've got the exchange rate plus the value added tax that goes on right. cars. Since I don't know, but Car and Driver says it's going to be like 45. So
when in doubt, guess.
When in doubt, yeah, just, I mean, just let's ride just it anyway. Shoot
right for the middle. And the funny thing is, like, Auto Express is like, well, I expect it to have different body panels, a different interior, different suspension, and a different engine. Like, no kidding. Thank you. Thanks for that.
Noted.
We needed to just put some Porsche news on our site, and so we made some up.
Gobbled it up quickly.
But, I mean, starting with the Q5 does not suck. I mean, the Q5 is a good vehicle. I like the Q5.
Yeah, I dig on the Q5, and, you know, Porsche is good at doing Porsche-y things to vehicles that shouldn't be able to handle. So I think it'll be just fine. I can't wait for the Trans-Siberia version. Yeah.
Or the Fabergé or whatever. They do a lot of different versions. I think the most garish, disgusting aftermarket version is the one you really want, like the Lawrencer. Is it Persang that does a lot of the most disgusting Porsches ever?
I have no idea. I don't do a lot of reading on disgusting Porsches, I'll be honest with you.
Okay. Where's Noah Joseph when you need him?
Busily working somewhere. I guarantee it.
Crickets. Crickets. I don't know. I mean, do you think that there's a point in a tiny Porsche SUV? I mean,
I guarantee you there is. They're going to sell them left and right.
Are they going to sell them or are they going to lease them?
Yeah,
both.
Both, I would imagine.
But I mean, all luxury automakers are going down right now. I mean, that's the...
Enough.
That's the new... The new cool is, you know, the small premium.
Well, they want to everything.
But I mean,
yuck, yuck, yuck.
It's a family show.
Yeah, me, Mr. Slow on the uptake. All right, moving on. Yeah, they want to. They it is. It's well, SUVs are kind of like the new black. I mean, they're everybody wants to have an SUV now.
Well, they want a crossover. They don't want, like, a body-on-frame SUV. They just want something with a little bit of ride height, something that gives you a little bit more of a command driving position and, you know, some hatch area. Yeah, it's smaller is good. Less expensive is good. More fuel efficient is probably good. It'll be fine. I'm not at all worried about that. At this point, Porsche has proved that it's not going to build a product unless it has certain Porsche attributes, you know, handling being one of them. Yeah. I'm sure they'll make a turbo version, and the turbo version will be faster than, you know, should
oh,
be.
Yeah. Yeah, what we're not going to get probably is the diesel, which they're, I mean, of course they're going to make a diesel, and there's going to be I would expect to have the same engines that the Q5 does. What is that? That's the 2-liter four-cylinder and the V6, right? The supercharged V6.
Yeah, so it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to be worried about this.
Be entertaining. But, I mean, clearly, when automakers like Rolls-Royce are jumping on the SUV bandwagon, this has got to sort of crash and burn at some point soon. It's kind of like, you know how real estate companies know that the market's getting overcooked when they get too many people applying for real estate licenses and stuff? Like this is the same thing, right? Like Rolls-Royce wants to have an SUV now. That's ridiculous.
Is it?
Well, all right. First of all, BMW wants to make a larger SUV, right? The X7. And that's what the Rolls-Royce SUV is going to be based on, right? Do I have that right?
I believe so.
So what is the point of a larger BMW SUV?
Well, why not? I mean, you're getting like the JX and slightly bigger, family friendly. I mean, it's going to be like the X7 anyway. It's going to be like a 7 series crossover, really.
And Mercedes has the GL class, is that right?
The GL.
Big honking.
The GL
machine
is enormous. But
that machine.
It's a great machine, but that's also like full frame, super big. That's
a
legit off-roader.
Sure. Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, but seriously, that's like a Range Rover competitor.
Well, it can tow. It can tow. I'm not sure I would call it an off-roader, but anyway.
I bet if you had to go down a dirt road, it could get you down a dirt road.
No. I mean, that's a body-on-frame vehicle with the suspension.
Body-on-frame does not equate off-road prowess. Anyway, I'm just saying BMW does not have that niche nailed down like Mercedes does.
But it has the 5 Series GT.
Yeah. That's like automotive Voldemort. We shall never speak of that again. I don't know. I mean, a 7-passenger BMW SUV. I don't know. I guess that does make
more sense than a Rolls-Royce SUV, though. Because, I mean, the thing is going to be ridiculously priced.
Well, Bentley's building one, right?
Yeah. And we've seen that.
Yeah, it looks hideous, and you know what they're going to do? They're going to print money with it. They're going to print money with it, guaranteed.
You know what this is? This is our sort of provincial tastes and social mores brought to bear, because there are other markets in the world besides the United States, and these automakers see that, like, you know what? We got to build cars for those markets, not these Americans whose economy is almost as bad as ours over here in Europe. Let's follow the money. So I guess I've just right now, light has dawned on Marblehead. This is not really for us. And
well, there you go.
Eureka!
Stop the presses. The Rolls-Royce SUV isn't for Jeff Roth, Zach Bowman, or Dan Roth. Moving on.
Saying us, I mean first. The collective us, the nation as a whole. Including those people who can actually afford it. I mean, there'll be people here that
I mean, it's just going to be like every other car in this price range. The top markets are going to be the U.S., China, and the Middle East.
Yeah, I think it might be more China and the Middle East as a top market than here, though. I mean, like,
I don't know. Like, this is probably going to be a step up, you know, from the
and Russia.
Well, I'm just saying in terms of price. I think this might be their new top priced model.
Really? And so you think Rolls-Royce is going to like make their most expensive thing an SUV?
Well, yeah, that's the way everyone else does it.
That's interesting. I was thinking that they might make it sort of attainable, you know, like start around 150, 175, you know? I mean, I guess it's not anything but rumor, and with SUVs booming all over the place, I mean, I guess you can't blame them. I mean, Ford's, what was it, the EcoSport? They're thinking about bringing that over here, apparently. Audi's working on an A3-based crossover-y thing. And there's that Jaguar SUV we've heard rumors about for a really long time. Did Auto Express make that rumor up too?
Probably.
So, I mean, I guess as disgusting as a Rolls-Royce SUV might be, it's probably going to broaden their appeal. But I mean, everybody's looking for the next Cayenne. That's my guess.
I concur.
Crickets, crickets. I guess I killed that one. Let's remind everybody that the Autoblog podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of all-season and performance tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. So we can move off of gas-guzzling very expensive things to electricity-guzzling very expensive things. Tesla superchargers.
Really guzzle electricity?
How else would you describe it? Yeah, I guess you don't really consume it, right? They utilize it.
They expend it.
Expend.
Yeah. I don't know. Everybody's giving Tesla lots of coverage this week, so why not us? I think it's pretty badass. They stepped up and they were like, you know what? We're going to build these things and we're going to go nationwide with them within a couple of years. You'd be able to get around a lot easier with our supercharger stations, plus a whole bunch of other hints where they said they may consider battery swaps and the superchargers are going to spread to Europe. And I mean, say what you will about Elon Musk and Tesla, but nobody else is really doing anything to bring the cost of the technology down, commercialize it, commoditize electric cars. So, hooray for that.
Well, I've been saying this for years now, right? We're like, oh, the biggest hurdle for electric cars is infrastructure. Somebody just needs to step up. Tesla's finally doing it, right? Tesla's like, all right, well, you know, if nobody else is going to establish an infrastructure, a usable infrastructure for our electric vehicles, then we'll just do it ourselves and people can choke on it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I can see other automakers hopping on to Tesla's technology, making it compatible with their, you know, because once the stations are built, right, nobody's going to come across and, like, it's not like you get Exxon and Mobil across this, well, that's a bad example. Like Exxon and Shell across an intersection from each other. Like, they're just going to figure out how to make their electric car compatible with the supercharger station, and boom, off we go.
But I could also see, you know, if the automakers got together, a couple years ago, they were trying to find out like a universal way to do electric vehicles.
Yeah, you know what happens when automakers get together and try to find consensus?
Nothing.
Gridlock. Gridlock happens.
But, I mean, this could end up being like Betamax. Like, Tesla comes out, they have a good idea, and then all the other automakers are like, all right, if we do something and make it the standard, then Tesla's going to be out of luck.
In a perfect world, an energy company would do this, right? Like an ExxonMobil or one of those guys would do this. They would come up with, here's the standard. We're going to provide charging stations at all of our fuel stations and rock and roll. But it seems like the traditional energy companies are so married to just, you know, chasing down every last drop of oil that they aren't interested in exploring other alternatives.
I just don't get that. Like, why would you do that? Like, because they burn off. I saw it when I was driving up 95 in Philly. There was like a refinery right there burning off stuff from its stack. Like, just generate electricity with that. Maybe that's crazy to think, but I can't imagine that it would be a bad line of business for them to get in when they just say, you know, we're an energy company, we're not just an oil company. And branching out like that gives them a little hook into this new wave of vehicles that it may or may not fully take off, but it's coming, and it's coming more aggressively than it ever has in the past. So I'm as baffled as you are why there's no big oil company hopping on the bandwagon, and we've got,
you know, they've got the resources to do it, right? I mean, they are some of the most profitable companies in the world, corporations in the world. So, you know, why not leverage some of those assets to track down another alternative?
Yeah, and I mean, we may be talking out our backsides too. There may be stuff like this happening that we're just not aware of.
We should have Blanco on. We should have Sebastian Blanco on.
We should have Sebastian Blanco on. I'll be intrigued to see how this works out, but I really think that because Tesla's first, they're striking while the iron is hot, they're going to set the standard like they have already in so many ways for the next generation of cars from more than one manufacturer. I mean, the only way to do what Tesla does on a somewhat more affordable scale is to buy a Leaf. And, you know, the Leaf... The Leaf has sold well, honestly, for what it is, but the charging is still the issue. Now, if Nissan were smart, they would make the Leaf compatible with the supercharger stations, and you'd be able to drive the Leaf anywhere you can drive Model S, for the most part. I mean, the range is less, but...
Right.
I don't know. The guy across the street was very excited. His brother owns a solar company, and he was like, yeah, so my brother, he's going to trade his BMW Active E for... a Tesla.
Very cool.
I was like, all right, bring it by. I want to check it out. Because as much as it pains me to say it, because I love the sound of pistons and push rods and camshafts and things, I think the Tesla Model S is pretty damn cool.
It's very cool. Yeah, it's been an American company, American manufactured car, and be that fast and that efficient. I don't know. It's very cool.
And pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You know who we should also have on? Who hasn't been on in a while? Shunk. We should get Shunk back.
True.
Because the last time he was on was when you were driving your Miata. And it was horrible audio quality.
Yeah, that was horrible. That
was a bad idea on my part.
You did the podcast from the car?
Sort of.
Yeah, Dan was like, oh, no, we'll call you. It'll be awesome. And it was like in a thunderstorm in Atlanta... with the top up, it was, and everybody was like, why don't you just pull over? And I was like, well, I've been driving for 9 hours now. I kind of want to be home. Just saying. Yeah. Putting that out there.
Yeah. Well, we tried.
True.
We did try. And, you know, we talked about Mitsubishi a little bit earlier before the podcast. They're trying. That's just so horrible. I'm sorry. I'm laughing at my own joke. The Mitsubishi Attrage, is that how we say it?
Attrage City.
I see what you did.
Excellent.
That'll be the electric version.
Yeah. Hey.
Or the smaller version.
Like, I thought about this car. I was like, oh, somebody's awake over there at Mitsubishi. And they've decided to copy the Versa. Is this U.S. bound? I think it is, right?
It is.
They're bringing the Mirage, probably.
Is that what this car is, or is this?
Everyone keeps saying this is the sedan version of the Mirage.
Yep.
Wow.
Which means that this actually looks better than something.
What does it look better than?
The Mirage. Because it looks like a Versa. The Versa's not bad.
Versa's not good.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at a car this small, the Versa's not bad. But the Attrage is... there's nothing good about this car.
Well, it's supposed to be crazy efficient. So there's that.
It's supposed to do like almost 600 miles on a tank, which is... it's like an 11-gallon tank, so
yep.
You do the math. That's like, what, almost 50 miles to the gallon, roughly?
Mm-hmm.
Or you could get a diesel, like in a Jetta.
Well, to be fair, that's 76 horsepower pulling you around.
Right, so that's kind of like running.
It's an oversized smart car, then.
No, nothing is as horrible as the Smart ever. Like, Mitsubishi's worst day is still going to be better than Smart's best day. I guarantee you that. Like, there is no car I would look at compared to a Smart and be like, yeah, I'll take the Smart. You can't tell me that's inaccurate.
No, that's accurate. I agree. I concur.
I would roll downhill in a shopping cart before I drove a Smart.
Hell yeah, shopping cart's fun.
Yeah.
it's probably as stable as a Smart as well.
Just wear a helmet.
Yeah. I say all these things about a Smart, and I'm sure like at a certain point they can be like, you know, our car passed all the safety regs, so for you to say that it's not stable downhill and it will tip over on its side and break the eggs like a shopping cart, that's not fair. And they're right, it's not fair, but it's...
You ever had a shopping cart tip over and break eggs?
I've never tried to drive a shopping cart down a hill.
I've been in one once, and it flipped over backwards, and it was not fun. That's
I was
why I say,
24 at the time.
Probably something close to that. That's why I say if you're going to do that, wear a helmet.
Okay.
Nice.
What were you doing in a shopping cart at 24?
I don't know how old I was, but I'm sure an open parking lot, some alcohol, and a dare may have been involved.
Did you get road rash on your forehead?
No, on the back of my head and on my shoulders. It was not fun.
Yeah, because you weren't wearing a...
Because what we did is we ran and then we jumped into the basket to go down the parking lot.
That is a terrible, terrible idea.
And when I jumped in, the cart went the front wheels up. And it was...
You briefly popped a wheelie.
Yeah. Well, I popped a wheelie and it cracked my skull open too.
That's awesome.
Yay!
Well done, Jeff. Well done. Way to distract us from the outrage. There's more going on at Mitsubishi than just this thing. Although this is their swipe at the Versa. I don't really think that this car is going to help Mitsubishi turn stuff around in the U.S.
None of its cars are. I mean, the Outlander, the Mirage, and this. I mean, maybe 15 years ago they were competitive.
At least
based on just looks. I mean,
yeah.
Who knows what their actual performance and fuel economy is going to be.
That's probably not entirely inaccurate. Although, like, they have the bones of a decent product in the Outlander, and they've just redone it. So, to me, that's a lot more interesting, and I think that that's going to be where they try to find some survival in this market. I mean, they're going to survive for as long as Mitsubishi's parent company wants to keep pumping in the money, because they're not making any money here right now. Of course, they also got bitten by, like, they've just been kicked. They're a company that's managed to kick themselves while they're down over and over and over again. Do you guys remember 000?
Yes.
Yeah. So, like back in 2004, like 10 years ago now, almost, basically they were saying, and there's an article from Business Week, where they basically said, you know, some analysts feared the new president's efforts come too late, saying, the auto analyst at Global Insight, they've been in the market for 22 years and they've failed to distinguish themselves from their competitors. I don't see any reason why they should survive in the U.S. It's taken that 10 years to just sort of sit there and do nothing. So they weren't really doing well in the U.S. 10 years ago. They're not doing well in the U.S. now. In between, I'm sure they probably haven't done very well. So they're only here because I think they want to be. And until they don't want to be, they're still going to be here. I would hope that they start to make better product, because at one time, like, Mitsubishi had awesome stuff,
such as
Eclipse,
the Diamond Star cars,
the original Avenger.
Okay, so I guess the Diamond Star cars is like one car. At one time, Mitsubishi had one awesome thing once.
Let's say cars plural, and I'm pretty sure I can think of like one or two per generation that were, you know,
the Diamante?
Serviceable. And we're not even talking like really good. We're just talking like kind of competitive, right?
Oh, the original Diamante was cool.
And the Eclipse was, I mean, for cheap sports cars, that was pretty neat.
Yeah, until it got all fat and bloated.
Oh, yeah, the second to last generation.
Yeah, so okay, so that's two things. All right, so maybe Mitsubishi hasn't really ever done very well. They had the Starion, right? The Starion was cool.
Yeah, but that was that's fair.
Montero.
Cool, but not very effective at being a sports car. Right?
What was that, Chicane?
Starion.
I don't think I've ever heard of the Starion.
It's a Chrysler Conquest.
Chrysler Conquest.
Oh, yeah, I love that thing.
Right?
Just looking at it, not driving it or owning it.
One of my first features I ever wrote, one of the guys from Underground Racing has one, and he shoved a small block in it, like an LS. I think it's like an LS1. Has stupid power and still going to the stock rear end.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's done nothing to the suspension or brakes. It's just like a big floaty crazy power like donut machine. It's pretty sweet.
And then there's the Gallant VR4. There's the 3000 GT VR4, the Dodge Stealth, which was the 3000 GT. A whole bunch of V6s that went into Chrysler products that turned into oil refineries all on their own. So there's reasons to love Mitsubishi.
Oh, the Raider.
Yeah.
Pickup truck.
Moving on.
Again, you're naming like serviceable vehicles. None of these are great, right?
Okay.
Like the 3000 GT, fine. Not overly fast, not overly reliable. It looks really good.
Oh, so you mean the real problem, analysts say, is that most of Mitsubishi's lineup is fairly nondescript.
That's the one.
The exception, the Lancer Evolution, or Evo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was also 10 years ago. Things are not looking good for Mitsubishi. They got to come out with a knockout. And I don't see yet. I mean, they definitely have a somewhat competitive vehicle now in the new Outlander. The Attrage, I don't know that that's going to be really helpful to them, because the bottom feeder cars are where Mitsubishi got in trouble with their 000, which is the point I was trying to make. Like, they attracted a bunch of buyers and they were like, yeah, we have a, for like a couple of years, they were bragging about how their sales were way up and they have this really young buyer demographic. And then they realized that,
all the cars were getting repoed.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody defaulted on their loans because they suckered them in with easy financing and predatory terms virtually, and they couldn't sustain it, and so the cars became an issue, and that really tarnished their reputation, because that flooded the used market with a bunch of ex repo Mitsubishis. Kind of a problem. So that's not helpful. I hope they don't try to do that again. Everybody complains about the little cars like the Versa, right? You think Nissan makes any profit off the Versa? You think Ford makes a ton of profit off the Fiesta?
No.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, I'd like to see them stick around, because at least it's something interesting. That's why I lament Suzuki going away, is there's nothing interesting now. But everybody wants to beat each other up. So when the big manufacturers beat each other over the head in terms of price and sales, the little guys die. Happens over and over and over again. But Toyota's not going to mess around either. They're bringing the 2014 Corolla. This is not huge news if you're an enthusiast, so anybody who really cares about cars, you can take a nap for a few minutes. But we have seen the taillight of the 2014 Corolla.
Actually, we've seen more.
Okay.
We've seen a headlight, like a bumper piece.
A bumper piece?
Yeah, I didn't see it. I got an email about something today and they showed a headlight. They had four pictures on Facebook.
Can you sort of fit it together and see what the 2014 Corolla is going to look like?
Just look at the concept car.
Right.
No, but I mean, this car is going to be huge for the industry, because the Corolla is one of the top selling cars.
Define what you mean for huge for the industry. You mean,
I mean, it's like in terms of sales. Like, if this thing is better than what people are buying now, then it's probably going to become a hot seller.
Well, the Corolla's already a hot seller. So.
Well, that's like, but it's still like what, number 3 or 4 on the car list?
Yeah, but I don't know. Any of its competitors are better cars than the Corolla.
The Corolla right now is essentially 10 years old. Nothing has changed. They've done some modifications, But the car you're buying now is not that much different than the previous model. But this one looks like it's going to be totally different. It's probably going to be a lot nicer based on what I've seen or we've seen from the Avalon and Camry and RAV4. So
what do you expect to see? You expect to basically see the Furia concept when the new Corolla rolls out?
Not exact, but something close, which means that it's not going to be boring.
It'll be boring. Don't you worry. It will be boring.
They will figure out a way. I think that if you were to strip off the giant wheels of the concept and the somewhat more fancy lighting, you'd have the Corolla. I mean, I think that's the whole point. I would expect that it's going to look like an itty-bitty Camry, like it has for a long time now. But the new Corolla is kind of a big deal because it does. It sets you up for the next decade, right?
Yep.
So I'm curious to see where it goes. I mean, we know the details that it's going to have the 1.8 liter engine that it's had since forever. Apparently, it's still going to have the 4-speed automatic. I don't know why that's chuckle-worthy, because the last time I had a 4-speed auto, I had no complaints.
The Avenger?
I was going to say, I think the Avenger had a 4-speed auto. I had no complaints about that. 6-speed manual, which is good. And then a CVT. I want to swear so badly about CVTs. The more I drive them, the more I think they are unacceptable. And they're proliferating now, which is even worse. Because they're just not good. At all.
Well, they do their job. And no one really seems to care because people still buy them. So
they vary gear ratios.
It's one of those things where it's like, I wonder if there will come a point where manufacturers will continue to make horrible, horrible CVTs to the point that that buyers are like, you know what? Is there another option? Oh, the manual transmission? Is that a thing that I can do? Is that something that we can try?
What's this third pedal over here? That's exactly. How do I work that thing?
That's like the very Jedi mind trick I used to get you to defend the Forester early. Like, give them options that suck and they will pick the
least crappy of them all.
I really highly doubt you're going to involve people in driving like that, as great as it would be. They don't want involvement. They want autonomous cars. Come on now. That's what's going to happen.
I like my world better.
I like your world better too, Zach. Can I live in your world? That sounds creepy.
Sure.
I'll leave on the midnight train to Georgia.
Georgia? Yeah, you will.
As if, you know, I'd rather live in your world.
Get out of Macon.
Yeah.
They used to have a hockey team down there.
Hockey in Georgia?
In Macon. The Macon Whoopee.
Oh, no. Really?
That was best.
No.
I'm serious.
No.
Look it up.
It would have been funny if her. It would be funnier if you had. Just saying.
I'm not that original, guys.
All right.
Yeah. So I mean, you're gonna see on the Corolla, you're gonna see the lights are bigger on the actual car. But yeah, that concept is pretty much dead on. So that's cool. I actually saw that car in New York and I was impressed with how sharp it looks.
I mean, if it looks like I'm looking at the concept right now, the way the C pillar is, it kind of looks like the Scion TC.
It kind of looks like it reminds me of some of the funktacularness of the old Toyotas, like some of the early 80s ones and stuff because they'd always try to mimic big American cars with their styling. And they'd always have some little awkward element where it just didn't work. And that C-pillar, it works. It's not awkward, but it's different. You know, like you look at it and you're like, neat. They've got sort of like an extended Hoffmeister kink thing going on there. So I think that, you know, this is going to be real stiff competition for the Focus. No, that's a lie. I don't think so. I mean, I think in terms of sales, yeah, it will. But in terms of driving dynamics, it's not going to really move the needle on my excitement meter. Zach, you're going to go on the drive. You'll tell me all about it.
I'm sure I will.
Well, perhaps we should talk about some of our questions this week, unless you have other things you'd like to chime in with. Crickets.
Not a thing.
Awesome. We'll hop into Joe L. from Georgia. He says, given the large amount of recalls that Ford's Mexican vehicles have been affected by, what is your opinion of Volkswagen, Mazda, and various other companies building plants in Mexico? Do you think that the quality of their vehicles will be adversely affected? Anyone? Bueller?
It's kind of hard to say if it's related to the Mexican workers or if it's just Ford. Because none of the cars, it's not like there are some of the same cars built here that aren't having problems. It's just all the cars, so it's kind of hard to tell. But it would be hard to believe that it's just the workers or just the plants or something like that.
Well, go ahead, Zach.
I was going to say automakers have been cranking cars out in Mexico for years with no serious dip in quality, so I don't see how the new plants are going to have that issue.
I think that you can get out. Mexico is like China, right? You can get out of it what you put into it. If you want good quality out of it, you pay attention to what the plant's doing, you supervise it well, and you will get a good quality product out of it. If you sort of want to beat them up on price and don't really care about your product other than getting a lot of it to sell for a price here, yeah, quality's going to suffer. But automakers are picking up from China, and not just automakers, but other widget makers, and they're going to Mexico now because the price of labor in Mexico is as China has risen, their price of labor has eclipsed that of Mexico. So Mexico is now a lot more attractive to establish a manufacturing base. So I don't.
Mexico is the new China.
Yeah. I don't think that it's going to adversely affect the product directly. In that sense, I think that management is going to have a much larger effect over it. And I mean, there's stuff that's like exclusively built in Mexico, right? For our market, like the Fiat 500. Has that really been a nightmare? I can't recall hearing of anything terrible about that car other than maybe perhaps the automatic transmission being slow in it. So I don't know. I don't think that Mexico is going to be a huge issue there. And I think that in terms of greenness, it might actually be better. We're not shipping cars on boats from China to here or from Japan to here. We're bringing them, you know, it's sort of on the North American continent, so hooray. Does Mazda need a partner to survive, and if so, who is that partner?
Alright. Yes.
let's do these lightning round kind of ways.
Alright, now yeah, I do think Mazda is going to need some sort of partner in the future, either in terms of manufacturing or engineering, just in terms of sharing costs. You know, R&D is very, very expensive, and for a small company like Mazda to be able to keep its head up, it's going to need somebody to jump in there with them.
Well, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier with Mitsubishi. There's a lot more profit in bigger cars, and they're doing small cars really well, but I think they need to focus on slightly larger, possibly.
Like what size larger?
I don't know, like the big, like the Mazda 6, like that, and a better CX-9.
I can see the CX-9 going away. The Mazda 2 is going to be based off the CX-5. The CX-5 is really well received. The new Mazda 6 is well received. Where does that leave the 3? Because the 3 is sort of still based on the Ford C1 platform kind of thing, so it's still pretty closely related to the Focus.
Well, I can tell you about the new 3 because I'm going to be driving it in a month.
So, nice. Zach, what can you tell us about the new 3?
Nothing yet. It's all under embargo.
Okay. Well, when you can tell us about the new 3, why don't you come back and you can, can give us the full download?
I will do my best.
All right. In the meantime, Do you all think Cadillac is going to be the top selling luxury brand by 2020?
No.
No. See, that's from Elvis. So I know that's just Elvis P in Kentucky. But I just figured it was fun. I wanted to say y'all. Let's see. Here we go. It's graduation season now, with students either leaving high school or college, and they or their parents are thinking about buying or leasing a new car. What cars do you think would be the best buys for these graduates or parents looking for a big graduation present? I have an answer for this.
Slap in the face.
Okay, Zach goes with the tough love. What about you, Jeff?
I've heard so many stories about people getting cars for graduation.
And crashing them.
Yeah, but I don't know, like a good, reliable used car.
So like a two-year-old Buick LaCrosse.
No, like a Jeep Comanche.
That is not a reliable used car. Do you have one to sell?
No.
It will reliably not run.
How about a Jeepster?
No. Well, yeah, you can buy a Jeepster if you'd like.
Three for one. Go ahead.
No, I don't understand why people would buy a brand new car for a high school graduate. It's like not even a couple years old, just like a $2,000 or $3,000 car from the recent automotive selection. I mean, something with good safety still. I don't know a specific car.
I'm not sure I'd call a Comanche the epitome of good safety.
I'm joking. That was the first thing that popped in my head.
No, I think it's actually brilliant because it won't run and therefore it won't go anywhere and it will be perfectly safe. The worst that can happen is you're going to get a puncture wound. You'll have to get a tetanus shot.
No, the 4.0 is pretty reliable. It'll go forever.
Yeah, but the rest of the thing won't.
There's one in my neighborhood that's running on like two cylinders. I swear, swear to Christ, the thing's just like
the only way you can kill a 4-liter is to overheat it. That's the only way.
But they do that a lot.
Maybe I ought to do that guy a favor and just like
cut his radiator hose.
Yeah, knife his coolant hose.
It would probably still run for a while.
I'm sure it would.
No, it doesn't.
It'd just be if
I've seen it.
If they get close to overheating, stuff starts going bad quick.
Look what! Now I want to know what goes bad. Does the head crack first, or does it cease? Yeah, well, the pistons overexpand. And
I mean, it's so long that it starts to warp really quick. That's why they.
I bet the block actually warps, huh?
I think it's more head related. Yeah, but it gets expensive, and then pistons start failing. It really doesn't take much to get those engines to go bad when it comes to cooling systems.
But new heads, new fully loaded heads are like $450. So, and there's only one of them. So, you know. Yeah.
But you could run the thing. Don't do an oil change for 10 years. It runs fine. Overheat it for 5 minutes and you're looking for a new engine.
Well done. But yeah, no, if we're going to attack cars for grads, Honda Civic, man. You know, I hate to be that guy who just, that's your default. And yeah, it's got a crappy interior, but it'll run, it'll resell when they're ready to sell their crap. It's totally fine.
Wait a minute. Isn't this the same guy who beat me up last week for saying, you know, there's nothing really wrong with the Civic?
No, I agree. I just, you know.
No, you didn't agree last week.
No, I'm just saying.
Well, and now you said there's nothing really wrong with the Avenger, so maybe Zach will agree with you.
No, I just said I prefer the Avenger over the Forester.
I'm just saying that in terms of like cars that you're going to buy that are going to be dirt cheap and run forever, that's the Civic, right? If you're going to buy something that you're going to enjoy for yourself, hell no, don't buy the Civic. There's so many better cars out there. And there are things wrong with the Civic. Oh, fantastic. You take the Civic over the Corolla. There's one right there.
Okay.
Yeah, rest assured, Honda, your throne is safe.
I was actually more entertained by the Civic than I was by the Elantra, even though the Elantra had all this stuff and the dirt, same thing. They all had stuff, but the Civic was better to drive.
Well, it's at that point, they're just giving you gimmicks now. I mean, they're all good cars, but Honda's like, we don't have to change.
Yeah, so...
But yeah, like, just something reliable, and I still think used. I know a lot of... Well, I hear stories about a lot of kids getting brand new cars. And it's ridiculous. because all they're going to do is like bounce off curbs.
Well, if you're a high school grad, the best car for you is to get a damn job and put your money in the bank.
Amen.
That's not true. You do that, you'll never have a car. What do you need a car
for when you're a high school grad?
Literally everything. Have you been to America? I'm almost convinced you don't live in America.
I grew up in America.
And did you have a car in high school?
No.
What?
No. We had a family car that I promptly wrecked. And so therefore there was no like spare car for me to use at my whim. No. My parents each had a car. And that was pretty much it. After I wrecked the Granada, there was a spare car for a while. But I took care of that.
Now your Granada obsession is starting to come into light.
Yeah.
We each got a free car when we were 16. Or when we wanted a car. My brother and I both got lucky because we had family members passed away. And then we got their cars. Mine was the celebrity.
Did you do that on purpose? Did you poison people?
Yeah, that's what I did. I poisoned somebody. No, mine was a celebrity, and I abused the living crap out of that car. Because why? I didn't pay for it. It was given to me. And that's what kids think. Like, they're not given, like, they don't have to have the responsibility. Then my subsequent cars, the next car I bought was an 88 Ford Escort. Thing burned oil. It ran like crap, but I washed that thing in the wintertime. I took care of it.
And it still blew up its transmission.
It just blew up its engine.
I mean, I beat the crap out of the cars I bought, too. I'm pretty sure just, like, beating cars, like, if you were into cars as a guy or as anybody, as a young person, I mean, that's just part of the recipe. As a young person, you're going to hammer the crap out of a car.
I think that's true. Like, after I wrecked the Granada, there was a Gulf, and I didn't buy a car for... Well, I think I bought my Volvo in 96, summer of 96, $500 240 wagon. I'm surprised that engine did not burst, because I swear to God I over-revved it more than once with a downshift. And it was just, I think it just, you do that. You drive really aggressively and stupid when you're young. And now I'm much more sedate. So I don't drive that aggressively on a regular basis all that much very often. There are times.
I had a few of those times this weekend.
Yeah, what about this weekend?
When I was driving the SLS.
Yeah.
That car, if I had it for one more day, I guarantee I would have got a speeding ticket.
I bet that V8 sounds pretty fantastic.
Oh, my goodness. It's an amazing car. And yeah. The best part was everyone looks at it. And it's just like, it's not like, ooh, look at that really expensive car. They look at it with, like, a joy of cars. Like, whether it's a little 5-year-old kid or an old man, like, people would look at it and love it.
You like it when the old men look more?
Well, I live in Florida. I like old men to like me.
Are you trying to find yourself a sugar daddy?
Actually, yes. Don't tell Amanda.
Hey, man, there are things we do for money. Those things, you know, you don't have to admit it. All right, so we got an email question from a former collegiate offensive football lineman. So he's 6'8", and so he says it's been difficult to find a car that is fun to drive and comfortable. I'd like to circle back with this because this is putting us all on the spot. So let's circle back and maybe solicit some input from the...
Let's circle back. Let's do this now. Come on.
All right, fine. All right. Well, I was going to throw the question out and say, like, we'll follow up with it next week. But all right, here we go. Right now, he's got a Chevy Silverado 1500 extended cab with the enormous leather seats. He calls it a man cave on wheels. And a Subaru Forester. We've been over the Forester. He calls it a car crossed with an SUV crossed with slowness. neither is all that great. Sure. He's looking to spend $35,000 to $40,000 on his next car when he moves back to the U.S., hoping for something with an absurd amount of driver legroom and is fun to drive. He says, is the 3 Series GT going to fit the bill? Maybe an A5 or something else.
6'8", wow.
Yeah. I bet everybody asks him if he plays basketball.
300 SRT8 or Charter SRT8 used, totally fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and those are good choices.
I bet you'd fit in that in those vehicles just fine.
So, by the way, the 3 Series GT, not going to fit the bill for anyone for anything ever. Ever. That is an abomination. The A5 is a pretty car, though. I could get behind
that. I don't think it's that spacious, though.
Well,
no, it's not that big.
Yeah, but how much does it matter, right? Like, if it's big enough for the driver?
But I don't think it's big enough for someone who's 6'8". Like,
come on, there's lots of tall guys in Germany. Oh, I got it.
Dan, for you, 5'11 is tall.
5'11 is tall. That's inches taller than me. Panamera. Can't oh, get yeah, one for that price go. Range, but man, that was designed to hold a very tall man in every seating position. Yeah, so that was my completely terrible.
There's been two cars lately that have surprised me with legroom. One I forget, and the other was the new Impala.
The Impala is the LaCrosse, which but is I'm the just saying that XDS.
I pushed the seat back because they kept saying how much legroom it had. I pushed the seat back far enough that I couldn't reach the pedals.
Did your feet dangle like you're on one of those like handicapped toilets?
No, I wasn't that. I don't have like 3-inch legs. I just I couldn't reach the pedals with the seat all the way back. I thought that was pretty cool.
And how tall are you?
6'1".
All right, so 6'1", you couldn't reach the pedals. Would you say you had another 7 inches to go between your foot and the pedals?
Oh, not 7 inches.
Okay. But nobody, I mean, you don't drive with the seat all the way back, so you're like...
Right. I mean, the Buick commercial where they got Shaq sitting in the LaCrosse, that's ridiculous. There's no way he could have drove, like, his knees are up at his chest. It's hilarious.
I want to see Shaq in an Encore. You don't
know Verano.
Yeah. All right, so
Cherokee SRT8, another good option. The reason I keep circling back these SRT8s
because they're fun. Because
you know, they're fun and they also feel huge. Like every time I'm in one, I feel like it's the whole I'm wearing my dad's sport coat thing. Like that's the sensation. It just feels like it's a car that's like 1.5 times too big. So you know, give those a shot. See if those fit the bill. They're fun. They get miserable fuel economy, but they generally look good.
And they sound great.
Sound amazing. And they do great burnouts and donuts.
That's true. They yes. I endorse that message. All right. So Peter says he listens to the podcast every week. They are perfect for short road trips. So maybe we can help him out. He's had a string of smallish yet character-filled cars, culminating in an AP1 S2000 that he loved. Kids are on the way, so it's time for a complete change in direction. He's always wanted a rear-wheel drive bruiser type four-door. So his list so far is the 300C SRT8, CTS-V, wagoner sedan, manual only, E63, before they started turbocharging it. He's also open to other options. He enjoys driving, so ideally there would be some semblance of fun, feedback, etc. Most likely CPO, as the budget is tight. So,
Magnum.
No.
Magnum.
If he's looking for a 300.
But a Magnum?
Yeah. Not a V6 Magnum. Either the V8 or the SRT.
That's a rare, rare car now, a Magnum SRT.
I rode in one this weekend.
What didn't you ride in this weekend?
A lot.
Okay. Why were you in all these fancy cars this weekend?
My friend who owns the ZR1 also owns the Magnum.
I see. So you guys worked on the ZR1, took it further apart, and drove around raising hell in the Magnum?
We had to go pick up tools and pizza. That's the best part about working on cars. Oh, we need a new tool. Let's go buy it. Oh, I'm hungry. Let's go get pizza. You work on a car for 4 hours, you actually do about 30 minutes worth of work. The rest is staring at the car and hanging out. No, I kid.
I like pizza.
Pizza's good.
Buy the BMW, man. That's what you need to do. Don't eat pizza or buy parts. Buy the freaking BMW.
Which BMW?
The E, what did he say?
E63 would be a Mercedes.
Sorry.
Buy the German car.
Buy the German car. No,
Buy the German car once and I'll edit it.
Don't buy the Mercedes. That's probably not a good idea. Buy the 3 Series. Just buy yourself a 3 Series. What's wrong with that? The 335i?
No, he said he's looking for a family. That's why I was going to go with the CTS.
Okay, fine. The 5 Series. Done.
5 Series?
You say that all incredulous, like...
Which 5 Series? Like you're looking used. Like, is you talking E39 or are you talking like E60?
Take your poison. What's going to be worse? All those cars are going to be readily available. They're going to be cheap compared to a freaking CTS-V wagon. Good God, man. You talk about shoveling out cash.
It's true. CTS-V is not getting any cheaper. But what about like a G8 GXP?
There's an option.
That's most of a CTS-V.
That is most of a CTS-V.
Still looks great. Still drives pretty well. Cheaper. I mean, there's differences.
It's shunk approved.
It is shunk approved. It's shunktacular. And it's got a trunk that can fit a metric shunk load. The 300C SRT8 is not a bad choice, which we just went over. What about a Taurus SHO? No, forget I said that.
It's big inside, but...
No. It's what? Big outside.
You could fit a family in a SHO.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But it's not as big as it should be, given the size of the car.
Right.
That's a behemoth. That's a car that it's like 1.5 scale. It looks normal until you get other cars near it, and then you're like, what happened? That's my story. I think we're done.
I concur.
You guys are tired. I can tell. I can feel it.
Yes.
Yes. This is a thing. We are brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of all-season and performance tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. So no matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. So I was actually thinking about this. Is there a business you can get involved in? Because I worked all weekend, like, doing things with my hands. That didn't sound right. But building things and using tools and working on the house and working on the car. And so I was like, you know, it'd be really satisfying to, like, do this kind of stuff as a career. And I'm like, yeah, probably not. But it's satisfying now. Like, how would you bring, like, working on cars together with your day job and stuff? And I was like, well, I don't really want to open a shop. So I don't know. I'm expecting that somebody out there has a better suggestion. I'm just throwing it out there. There's got to be a way.
Question there?
Yeah, it's a conversation starter. Like, well, I mean, Jeff, you worked on cars like professionally.
Mm-hmm.
That had to suck after a while.
It didn't, like, until the dealership started getting very corporate. Like, when I was doing it, all the dealerships were independently owned. Now they're all dealer groups. So the low end of the totem pole just got a lot lower. And yeah, that's when I got out. I'm just like, you get these people. I mean, it's small scale, but still you get like a person sitting in an office controlling what happens in the shop when they have no idea how to work on a car.
Right. And so it's book rate and all right. That business. And see, that's not the kind of thing I find fun. But on the other hand, like, I don't want to run a restoration shop because like that's difficult to sort of get into. I don't know. Like, I wouldn't. I don't know. I just want to have fun.
See, I know after this weekend and then whatever I do in the future weekends with the ZR1 and the SVO, I'm definitely starting to get bit by the bug again. And it, but at the same time, it is so much easier working on someone else's car. I got Jeepsters sitting in my driveway, probably 20 feet away from me right now. I dread working on them because it's going to cost so much money. When I'm working on someone else's car, it's just like, let's go buy a part.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's working with somebody else's budget. See, but if you could restore your cars with a budget, that would be good, right?
Yeah.
You need a sponsorship. You need to sell your forehead as space to get somebody's logo tattooed.
Or my beard. I heard guys are doing that now.
That's right. Little signs in their beard. What was it? What was it that was? It was root beer, right? A&W root beer.
I like A&W.
Yeah, so rent out your beer to A&W. We should all do that. We should get some extra sponsorship for the podcast. Zach, can you grow a beard?
No.
Damn.
Zach's already asleep.
Yes.
All right. Well, you can hit us up at podcast@autoblog.com. You can find us on Twitter @autoblogpodcast. Leave us some feedback on iTunes, and we will catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
See you guys.
Bye.